Okay, if you'll turn in your Bibles to Matthew chapter 8, before we get started, I'll remind you that I'm going to, from time to time along the way, kind of give you guys some simple elementary things for us to learn, to just, again, just recognizing that there's a lot of people that don't know a lot of the basics of the Bible. So we're just going to learn some simple things, and some of it will be redundant, repetitive, but it will be helpful too, I think, I believe. Okay. And so, first of all, Matthew 5, 6, and 7 are one complete sermon by the Lord Jesus Christ, the longest one that the Bible records at one time. And what is the name of it? Sermon on the Mount. Thank you. Okay, and then we have the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Each one of them are written by those individuals, but each one of them comes from their own personal perspectives of seeing the same things and in many cases documenting the same truths, the same miracles, the same parables, and this sort of thing, but just coming from their perspective with putting a different emphasis on certain things. So with that in mind, each one of them really presents Jesus from a different aspect of who he was. So for instance, Matthew presents him as the king. We've looked at that from the start. Mark presents him as a servant. Luke presents him as the Son of Man. And John presents him as the Son of God. So be reminded of that, because next week then I'm going to ask you what each one of them are. Matthew presents him as king, Mark servant, Luke son of man, John son of God. Okay? How many books are in the Bible? 66. All right, that's a good deal. And all right, let's read in Matthew chapter 8, beginning in verse 1. It says, "When he was come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him. And behold, there came a leper and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean. And Jesus put forth his hand and touched him, saying, I will, be thou clean. And immediately this leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus saith unto him, See, thou tell no man, but go thy way, show thyself to the priest, and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a testimony unto them." Remember that leprosy was the most dreaded disease of the ancient world. It was not only a physically gruesome disease, but the social ramifications of the disease were very, very difficult to endure. A leper was essentially cut off from society as a whole, in the sense that they could not move amongst the people closely, including their own families, and so there was a lot more than just the physical turmoil and pain that they were in, but also the emotional and the loneliness and all of this thing. And so the leper in this text has come to the right place. He's come to Jesus. Last week we saw this, looked at it closely. He approached Jesus. He came with confidence because he knew that Jesus had a big heart. Two, he came with reverence because he understood that Jesus was the Son of God. Three, he came with humility. He recognized the sovereignty of the Lord. He knew that Jesus could heal him, but he also knew that it was Jesus' prerogative to not do so. He's sovereign, and he respected that. And then number four, he came with faith because he knew Jesus had the power not just to cleanse him, but also to save him. So in response to that leper's faith, we find in verse 3 that it says, "Jesus put forth his hand and touched him, saying, I will, be thou clean. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed." Jesus could have very easily just spoken a word and brought about the complete healing of this leper. But amazingly, he did more than that. He reached out and touched him. Now, at first glance, you might think, well, he did that to just about everybody that he healed. But you're thinking about he was touching a leper. Because all people were forbidden by the law from touching a leper, it said that lepers dealt with a longing for human touch. In other words, there's a lot of power in the human touch. And because they never got that, it says that they wanted any kind of they longed for contact, whether it be a hug or a pat on the back or a handshake. Any kind of gesture like that would have been welcomed. In their isolation, they were void of any kind of physical affection from anyone, from human beings, okay? But yet Jesus chose, with his loving heart and his compassion, he crossed that line. And with the new life that he was offering this leper, he was also revealing his willingness to condescend to any level that was needed to touch the life of, in this case, the outcast of outcast, a leper. He just crossed that boundary. And this is a picture for you and I of what Jesus is and what he does and how big his heart is. And it speaks to you and I on a deeper level of his willingness to spiritually touch our lives, though we're contaminated with sin, because leprosy is very much a picture of sin. It defiles a person. It causes a person to not live a fulfilled life and to not be able to reach their full potential. Sin is very devastating, and so was leprosy. And so Jesus crossed that boundary and touched him. And of course, you notice that it says that it was instantaneously. It says immediately he was made whole. I got to thinking about this when I was studying this morning. Of all the miracles that Jesus performed during his time here on earth, this is probably would have had to have been one of the more astonishing miracles to those who were present. Because you consider, you know, he gave sight to the blind, and yeah, that's impressive, but you didn't see any transformation take place. You just, the person says, well, now I can see. He did a lot of things, but in this case, they before the eyes of the people, and remember it says there in verse 1, there were multitudes, there were a lot of people there. This probably deformed, because that's some of the effects of leprosy. Scaly, that's what the word leper actually means, is scales. He was a scaly man. Possibly, as we discussed last week, possibly might not have, their fingers actually begin to fall off and their toes. And so potentially that was the case with him. He was likely hunched over, decrepit. And all of this was made whole. Now, I'm not saying, I don't know the dynamics of whether his fingers were put back on, obviously, but I know this, that he was clean. There was no more scaly. I know that he was physically made whole. The raspy voice that we spoke of last week that would develop in a leper. Now this guy's got a smooth voice, smooth skin. He no longer smells of decay, as was the case when he had leprosy, and he stood upright instead of being hunched over. And so everything about him was made whole right there in front of everybody. So you can imagine how absolutely astonishing it would have been to those that were looking. And all of this was a response to his faith in Jesus. And with that faith should come obedience. And so Jesus in verse 4 says, "I see thou, tell no man, go thy way, show thyself to the priests, and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a testimony unto them." So basically, he's told to go fulfill the requirements of the law. And by doing so, he would be having the temple priest basically attest to the fact that he was cured. Basically getting the stamp of approval. This guy's cured is what that was about. And he was supposed to also offer the appropriate gifts that, as it would be outlined in the law. All of that's found back in the book of Leviticus. But notice another reason for him to do this. In the latter part of verse 4, it says, "For a testimony unto them." the question is, a testimony unto who? He would have been concerned about the testimony that this leper was giving before the Jewish leaders. Of course, the priests were leaders, but there would have been all kinds of religious leaders around. And it was important. Remember, Jesus says he came. He said back in chapter 5 of Matthew that he came not to destroy the law, but to fulfill the law. And so, essentially, he's keeping this leper and himself, as the one had healed him, he's keeping them above reproach. In other words, to testify to the people that this is a true miracle that's taken place, and by going to the priest and by offering his gift and all of this, he was staying above reproach. He was fulfilling the law. And this just drives home to you and I the importance of our testimony. There's no doubt we should come to Jesus as we are, come as you are, as they say. But if he's really touched our life as he had this leper's, then we will leave differently. We come as you are, but you're going to leave differently if Jesus truly touched your life. And a life that's lived right simply gives testimony to those around us that something real has taken place. Something real has happened in our life. And it goes a long ways in quieting the critics. That would have been something that would have been very important that Jesus established before those religious Jews, that this was a legitimate healing of a leper. Now we're going to move on to our next text. It begins in verse 5, and it says, "And when he was entered into Capernaum, there came unto him a centurion beseeching him, and saying, Lord, my servant lieth at home sick of the palsy, grievously tormented. And Jesus said unto him, I will come and heal him. But the centurion answered and said, Lord, I am not worthy that thou shouldest come under my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. For I am a man under authority, and having soldiers under me, and I say unto this man, go, and he goeth, and unto another, come, and he cometh, and to my servant, do this, and he doeth. And when Jesus heard it, he marveled, and he said unto him, said unto them that followed, Verily I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel. And I say unto you that many shall come from the east and the west, and shall sit down with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the children of the kingdom shall be cast out into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Now watch this. "And Jesus saith unto the centurion, Go thy way, and as thou hast believed, so be it done unto thee. And his servant was healed in the selfsame hour." Capernaum, let's just start with that. This was apparently the hometown of the Apostle Peter. We'll read one more verse. Verse 14 says, "And when Jesus was come unto Peter's house, he saw his wife's mother laid sick of the fever." And so this was the Apostle Peter's hometown. Later in the book of Matthew, we don't have to flip over there and look, but in chapter 11, verse 23, Jesus pronounces a curse upon Capernaum. I'll read it to you. It says, "And thou, Capernaum, which art exalted unto heaven, shalt be brought down to hell. For if the mighty works which have been done in thee had been done in Sodom, it would have remained unto this day." He's essentially saying, he spent a lot of time in Capernaum. If you read the Gospels, you'll find that he was in Capernaum quite a bit. And all the stuff that he performed there, and yet people continued to reject him. And so he predicted or pronounced a curse and predicted that this town would be laid waste. And the very thing that he predicted took place and has remained laid waste all through the centuries. The only thing that's left of Capernaum is said, and the archaeological discoveries, is the synagogue. There's the remains of the synagogue, and then the remains of a few of the houses that would have been there unto this day. And I thought that was interesting. Peter lived there. And so even his house was brought to ruins in whatever, I don't know what come to pass that made it happen, but Jesus said it was going to happen. And I guess possibly Some of the ruins that are there today could have been Peter's house. We have no way, we'll ever know. Whatever the case is, Jesus spent a lot of time in Capernaum. And in this visit to Capernaum, he's approached by a centurion. Let me remind you, a centurion is a Roman officer that is over, that oversees 100 Roman soldiers. Thus the word century that's there, the root word of centurion. And normally, under normal, ordinary circumstances, the Jews despised Roman soldiers of, at any level. Not just because they were Gentiles, but because the Romans occupied the homeland of the Jews. The Roman soldiers were often oppressive to the Jews. They kind of rode roughshod over them, if you will. And they just did not. They held the Roman soldiers in great, in low esteem, if you will, in just in disdain. And but this man was different. This centurion was different. There's a parallel passage to this this same occasion or the same event is found in Luke chapter 7. And in Luke chapter 7, it tells us that the Jewish elders there in Capernaum told Jesus that this man is worthy to have his servant healed. And they said this, "For he loveth our nation, and he hath built us a synagogue." So it's a pretty amazing thing for a Roman of any level, but especially a centurion, to be held in esteem by the Jews that way. But it tells us that this Roman centurion was a God-fearing man. Because not only did he love the nation of Israel, he loved the Jews, but it says he had built for them a synagogue, and so he was instrumental in some way of providing them a place, and the synagogue was the center of Jewish worship and Jewish learning in each community. Obviously, it wasn't the temple, it was the very center, but in communities there were synagogues, okay? And so he loved the people of God enough that he was helped, instrumental, if not solely responsible for building a place for them to learn and worship. And I thought that was very interesting. So clearly, this is a God-fearing man. Another indication that that this man had a changed heart and was a God-fearing man was the fact that he was so concerned about his servant. He said he's at home and sick of the palsy. Most Romans, slave owners, considered their slaves just instruments. They were equal to they were tools of the trade, if you will. They were equal in the eyes of the Romans. Slaves were equal to a beast or a farm implement and an inanimate plow or something. They just did not regard the life of their servants. It was a rare thing. They had life or death control over their servants. In other words, if they decided to kill one, they could just kill it, and with no repercussions. And many of the slave owners were very brutal in the sense that when a servant of theirs or a slave of theirs became unuseful, maybe by age or by injury or by sickness, they would just dispose of them, just discard them. Have them put away or let them die or whatever. And so this man was not along those lines. He was not inhumane like that. He had a deep compassion for this particular servant that was dying at home. And the word that's rendered servant here, and I John MacArthur said this, and I followed up and I looked it up. It has the connotation of young child. In other words, the Greek word that's rendered servant here, it's saying that it was a young child servant. And so it wasn't that this was some great, strong slave that that was of great monetary value, and man, I can't lose him because he gets so much work done, and he's so, you know, he's just so valuable. It'd be too costly to lose him. It wasn't that at all. This was a little one. This was a little child, It was probably born to some of his servants that he had. And he was very, very concerned about it. That same parallel passage that I told you about in Luke chapter 7 tells us that it says, in fact, that he was dear to the centurion. And so here he emphasizes to Jesus how important it is that this healing take place of this little child servant of his. He says there in our text that he was grievously tormented. And so this centurion had a big heart. He had a big heart and he had a belief in God. And so he comes to Jesus knowing that, hey, you are, as the Son of God, you are capable of healing this servant that I care so much about. And of course, he petitions to do that. And I think it's important that we realize that even some of the Gentiles already were gravitating to Jesus and recognizing him. If you'll remember at the cross, another centurion got saved at the cross. He recognized that Jesus was the Son of God. And so really, when you think about it, this particular Roman officer that we're reading about, along with the one the centurion that came to Jesus at the cross, he's in heaven right now. I mean, we're going to see him someday, perhaps. And it's pretty amazing how, when you begin to put together the pieces, that the effect that Jesus, as the Son of God and the Son of Man, was coming to the Gentile world at that particular point. Okay, and so we'll go ahead and we'll wind it up right there, and then we'll pick up next time where we left off and see what's next. Okay, appreciate you guys. Hope you'll be here Sunday. I hope you'll invite somebody. I was so glad to see another family return after a year of COVID this last week, and we just continue to see that happen, and we praise the Lord for that. Okay, let's go ahead, and we'll be dismissed in a word of prayer here in just a moment. All right. JP, would you lead us in prayer, please?
This and learn and continue to learn your word, God, and help us to go through the rest of